No, the only death will be the death that the first parents died at the time of their disobedience, which was the deprivation of the great privilege of receiving the divine love and thereby partaking of the divine nature of the Father, and immortality. Well, my dear boy, I have written enough for tonight and will stop. You have my love and my influence to help you in every way, and also my prayers to the Father for your spiritual development. So with my blessings, I will say good night. Your loving grandmother, Anne Rollins. I am here, your Helen. Well, sweetheart, I am so glad that your grandmother finished her message, for she was so anxious to do so, and I know that you will enjoy the same. I will not write more tonight, as I see that you are tired. Your own true and loving, Helen. June 3, 1916. I am here, Josephus. I come tonight to write a few lines upon a subject in which you may be interested, as I have observed that recently you have been reading my History of the Jews, and there are some things in that book which require correction. I don't mean that I desire to correct the whole book, but I do want to say something on some of the subjects that you have been reading about. Well, you will notice that I attempted to tell of the creation of the world and of man, and that what I said was taken from the Old Testament, and that I elaborated a little upon what is contained in Genesis. My work was not taken entirely from the Old Testament, for in my time on earth there were other books dealing with the subject that were entitled to just as much credence as was the Old Testament, and from these books I obtained much information that is contained in my writings. But the truth of the things which I wrote, I find now to be not the truth in many particulars, and should not be accepted as such. The description of the creation of man is not in accordance with the facts, and the story as related in the Old Testament, and by me, is not the true story of the facts of such creation. I have not the time now to enter in detail into a correction of the 392 errors contained in these descriptions, except that I wish to say a few words as to the creation of man and also his fall. He was not made of the dust of the ground, but was made of the elements that existed in the universe of a different order from the mere dust of the ground, and was so created by God for the purpose of forming the mere physical body of man. The two persons called our first parents were created at the same time, and not one out of the rib of the other. Therefore, the man and the woman are equal in their dignity, and in the relationship which they bear to God, and the one is of just as much importance in the sight of God as is the other. One was created stronger, physically, than the other, and also was given a stronger mentality, for the exercise of the reasoning powers, and the workings of the physical organs of the body, and the other, while weaker in these particulars, yet was given more of the spiritual and emotional nature, and also, an intuition by which she could understand the existence of things just as accurately as and more quickly than could the man by the exercise of his reasoning power. One was just as the other as respects the gifts bestowed, and together, they were the perfect pair, male and female were they created, with diverse functions and duties to perform in the perfect workings of the laws of God. Power and love were theirs, and neither was made the superior of the other, nor was the one to be subject to the other, and had it not been for their fall there never would have been the subjection of the female to the male. When the disobedience took place and the consequent fall, the qualities of the spiritual were taken from them to a large extent, and the animal qualities, as they may be called, asserted themselves, and then the male felt his superiority by reason of the fact that he possessed a greater amount of these animal qualities. And the female became subordinated and continued to be ever afterwards, for the male, not having these spiritual qualities to the extent that his mate possessed them, and not being able to realize the greater existence of these qualities in the female, believed that the physical was the superior, and as he possessed the physical to a larger degree than his companion, he determined that he was the superior, and therefore asserted this superiority, and the female, observing that this physical superiority did exist, submitted herself unto the male, and so continued until now. As man degenerated, this domination of the male intensified, and in some parts of the earth the Paget Messages 1916, female became nothing better in the sight of the dominant man than one of the lower animals. This degradation continued until man found the lowest place of his degeneracy, and when the turning point came, the qualities of the woman came to be more recognized, but very slowly, and for many thousands of years this inequality continued and man remained the master. As man evolved from this low condition and the moral qualities began to come more into his consciousness, and the animal nature became less dominant, the condition of the female commenced to improve, and as education came into the life and practices of men, woman's opportunities became more extended, and she was more and more recognized as approaching the equal of her companion. In some countries of the earth her equality was recognized, but not in many. The Jews recognize the equality of the woman in all matters pertaining to the home or the domestic life, and continued the distinction which had previously existed, only in respect to public affairs and the qualities of the mind. Women were not permitted even by them to develop their mental faculties, and were taught that they were things that belonged to the male, in all matters pertaining to the state or religion of the race. The consequence of this course of life was that the woman developed the spiritual qualities which were hers to a larger extent, and her refinement and emotional nature and love principle exceeded those of the man to a great degree, and she became in her soul nearer the image of the divine. I have noticed that this progress has continued with the passing of the years, and now in some of the nations of earth the equality of the woman has become recognized. Notwithstanding the fact that the laws of these countries did not permit her to exercise the rights of man, as she is his equal only in the home or in social life. But a time will come when she will be recognized not only by the individual man but by the man-made laws as his equal in every particular, and the further fact will appear that she will be his superior in matters pertaining to the spiritual. As the time approaches when man shall return to his former state of purity and harmony with the laws of God, the spiritual qualities will assert themselves and the animal will become subordinated, and woman will stand before God and man as the latter's equal, and in these soul qualities, his superior, for in the beginning, in this particular, she was his superior, but that superiority existed only in order that what in this regard was lacking in man, was supplied by the woman, and the perfect pair was one. You may think that this is a digression from what I first intended to write, and so it is, but I thought the occasion a proper one to tell mankind the future of the two integral parts of the perfect creation of God. I will not write more tonight, but sometimes will come again and write. So with my love I will say good night. Your brother in Christ, Josephus. I am here, your own true Helen. Well, my dear one, you have had a message from Josephus, that may be considered a women's rights argument, and I have no doubt that womankind will agree with him, especially as to his prediction as to what the future of women will be. This may be all true, and the predictions may come to pass. I don't know. But this I do know, that as regards the divine love of the Father and the conditions in the celestial heavens, there is no distinction made between the man and the woman, except as the individual soul development makes the distinction. And when you consider the further fact that the two parts of the one soul, represented by the male and the female, must, in order to make the perfect one, become united in perfect harmony, you can readily understand that there will be no superiority of one over the other, but that both must be equal, not only in love and the nature of the divine, but in every other quality that may exist. So in my opinion, instead of women and the men thinking about women's rights and such matters, they should devote their thoughts and aspirations to obtaining the divine love in their souls, with the certain knowledge that as they obtain it in equal degrees they will become not only the equal of one another, but will become so very equal that they will exist as one, though in two individual forms and personalities. But, of course, I recognize the importance of the equality of both being recognized on earth, for the purposes of earthly existence. Yet, mankind will find that as this love of the Father enters more into souls of men, or even as the natural love becomes more purified, the rights of women as to things material will become recognized without the enactment of any laws declaring the equality of the sexes. For love is an equalizer more powerful than any laws that man can make. But I will not write more on this subject, for when love comes, divine love, it will not be necessary that law shall declare the equality, as that 393, the Paget Messages 1916, love will, of itself, make them so in harmony that inequality cannot exist. Well, I intended to write you a long letter tonight, but as others have written and it is late, I will not dry. Your own true and loving, Helen. June 4, 1916. I am here, St. Luke, writer of the third gospel that was. I desire tonight to write a short message on the question, what is the use in believing in the sacrifice of Jesus on the cross as a salvation from sin? I know that this belief is at the foundation of the so-called Christian religion and is the cornerstone of most of the churches as they now exist, but as such a belief is false and does not effectuate the object claimed for it, I must declare the utter uselessness of such a belief and the great harm it is doing to mankind. A thing is just what its internal qualities make it. I mean by this, what the ingredients of its composition causes it to really be, and these ingredients cannot be supplied unless they have in themselves, an existence of those qualities which are sufficient to make the composition just what is necessary and required to produce the thing in its genuine substance. This applies to things of the soul, and unless the qualities of the soul are such as to eliminate the elements of sin and everything that prevents that soul from coming into harmony with the laws of God, that soul will continue in sin and separation from the divine nature of the Father. The soul is in each individual an entity which is distinct and separate from the soul of every other man, and is dependent for its qualities, not in what that other man may do or not do, but upon that which will make those qualities like, or in substance the same as the qualities of that thing which is desired or sought for, as a necessary acquirement in making the substance of that possessed and that desired, similar. According to the belief of which I speak, the sacrifice mentioned causes the salvation of man by appeasing the wrath of God and lifting from man the condemnation under which he was suffering, and by accomplishing such an object man became a new creature in his soul qualities, and was given the qualities that are required to make him like unto the Father, and, therefore, he man, has nothing further to be done for him in order to relieve him entirely from the possession of this sin, and from the demands of God. The sacrifice is sufficient to bring about these results. 394. But as we have told you, and as even the followers or possessors of these beliefs assert, love is the great necessity to effectuate the union between God and man, and this love must dwell in the soul of man as well as in the bosom of the Father, waiting its bestowal on man. It, the divine love, can be obtained only by sincere seeking on the part of man, and no other way is provided by which it can be obtained. The sacrifice or the shedding of blood does not cause the inflowing of this love into the souls of men, and the mere fact, even if it were true, that an angry God had been appeased, or debt paid, or a mortal is redeemed, would not cause this love to become a part of the souls of men. I know that it is asserted that these things, in some mysterious way, reconciles God to man, and thereby causes the acceptance of man by God, and when that is done, all the sins and depravity of a man's soul immediately become no longer a part of his soul's qualities, and the soul is perfected and its condition is that which enables it to become of a nature like that of the Father. But a difficulty with this conclusion is that only Jesus and God are the one that are participating in this great work of redemption, and man is eliminated from the necessity of doing anything, except to believe that the sacrifice is sufficient to cause his full salvation, and all that it means. How this belief that the sacrifice or the flowing of the blood can make a sinful soul pure, or become a partaker of the divine nature of the Father, has never been explained by the teachers of the Christian doctrines in any way that is consonant with reason, and cannot be so explained, for the one reason that is of itself sufficient, and that is, that the sacrifice does not work such a consummation. No one man, not even Jesus, can do the work of another or for another that will produce the results necessary to ensure reconciliation mentioned. It is claimed that Jesus died to save all men from their sins, or that he that believeth on the name of Jesus shall be saved from their sins. But the question again arises, how, in what way, can it be argued that his death made the impure man clean, even though he believed it did? Can his blood shed on Calvary cleanse the soul of any man? I know that it is claimed that in some mysterious way it does, but no one explains the how. Can any one of the great theological teachers tell you by what mysterious or other process this blood operates on the mercy or love of God, so that the sinner is saved from his sins or from there. The Paget Messages 1916, penalties which the violation of God's laws entail? I know that they cannot, and for the same reason as before stated that the blood does not accomplish these results. Then what is the use in accepting such belief when it cannot be understood or explained, and is the blindest of blind beliefs of mortals? No, no sacrifice of Jesus, no shedding of his blood and no vicarious atonement as it is called, can save a human soul from sin, or bring it into the love of the Father, or cause it to become a partaker of the divine nature. We have already in previous messages declared and explained to you what and what only brings to men salvation, and I will not here repeat, but will say this, that except a man be born again, he cannot enter into the kingdom of heaven. Nothing less is sufficient and nothing added to can in any way bring about man's salvation. I will not write more tonight, as what I have said should cause men to think and understand upon what false and baseless foundation they stand when they rely upon the belief in Jesus' sacrifice to save them from their sin. With all my love and blessings I will say, good night. Your brother in Christ, Luke. June 6, 1916. I am here, Lillian Summer. I am here, the woman who lost her soul to preserve her standing in society while on earth. I was a woman who never thought of things spiritual or of the future life, but lived only for the pleasures of the present. I had everything that money could buy, and never knew what trouble in the way of desiring and not getting meant. I had an indulgent husband and lovely children, who made my home very happy, and who loved me with all the love of their natures, and, of course, I loved them, but I did not feel the necessity of any other love, nor did I really know of any greater or higher love. Of course I attended church and listened to the sermons of the preachers, and enjoyed them as intellectual treats, but as to appealing to my soul, I never once, as I can remember, experienced any sensation other than what came from the exaltation of my mind. My children were sent to Sunday school and learned what the teachers tried to instruct them in, but at home they had no religious teachings, as I never had any religious experience myself. My husband was not an attendant at church and knew nothing of the higher things of life, and 395, was satisfied to make money so that his family could have all the comforts of home. We had a happy home in our love and associations, and never felt that there was any other happiness that might be ours other than that which we had. Now I realize the want of this spiritual conception of my being and the great joy that I am deprived of because of my want of knowledge of the things of the soul. I had a love nature, and I loved most people with whom I came in contact in a society way, yet this love was more or less unconsciously given, and my great ambition was to become a society leader, and the admiration, and possibly envy, of my friends. Now, I see the falsity of it all, and how little of the ambitions of life, in the particulars mentioned, weighed in the standing and happiness of the spirits in this world of revelation and nakedness, for I am naked as regards all the thoughts and acts of my life, and very seldom do I see anything that helps my present condition. I merely write you this that possibly someone who is living the life that I lived may read it, and turn her thoughts to the essentials, and let all these things of the earthly become secondary and of minor importance. My name was Lillian Summer, and I lived in Richmond, Virginia, and died in 1902. I thank you for permitting me to write, as it has made me feel better and more at home. I will say good night, Lillian Summer. I am here, Kate Stone. Let me write just a line or two. For while so much love is present, I want to enjoy it and tell my brother that Mr. Morgan is not the only one on earth who has a mother and sisters and soulmates' love. I have not written often to him, but have been present many, many times when others were writing their messages of love, and while I was not writing, I was impressing him with my love, and I know that he felt it, for I could see his emotions, and the return of his soul love to me as he received mine. Of course, the sister's love is not so great or of the same quality as the soulmate's, or even that of the mother's. Yet it is a love that is all pure and unselfish, and carries with it the influences that can come only from a soul that has received the purification and great joy of the Father's love. I do love my brother, as we all do, and I try so hard and so often to cause him to realize that my poor little sister's love is flowing to him in all its fullness. The Paget messages 1916, I know that he has a great deal of not only the natural love but also of the divine love as well, and if he could only know how happy it makes us to realize that he possesses this divine love, and is constantly seeking for more, he will try all the harder to get more of it. We can see his soul condition, and to us it is just as naked and open to our soul's vision as is the souls of spirits one to another, and nothing can be hid from us. So you see from what I say that he cannot pretend to love his soulmate, for she knows exactly what love he has in his heart for her, and when he tells her that he loves her she knows to just what extent, and so with the rest of us. All of us are very happy and constantly progressing in our soul development and in happiness, and while this is so, we do not forget him, or our brothers and sisters on earth. I am sorry to say that they do not know of this divine love, and we are trying so hard to impress them with the knowledge of its existence, and the fact that it is waiting for them. But we know that some day they will have an awakening and receive it, for we do not think it possible that such love as ours can be with them so constantly, seeking to influence them, and not in the end bring to them a consciousness that the other love is waiting for them. And we have a great deal of faith, and the Master tells us our prayers will be answered, and he knows. What a precious brother and friend he is, and how he seems to love you and your friends. When mother and father and the rest of the family here get together, we often wonder and try to understand why the Master should have selected you as the recipient of his love to such an extent, and for his disciple to do the great work that must be done for the salvation of mankind. Oh, we are all so thankful and happy that such a thing has come to you, and you, my dear, dear brother, must try to appreciate what it means to you and to others. The Master is with you quite often, and when you and your friends get together he comes to you, and casts upon you his love and blessings, and also come many high and wonderful spirits with their love and influences of happiness and peace. So listen to your sister, who was not very wise on earth, but who now knows the wonderful things that come to her with the inflowing of the Father's love. When she tells you to pray more and let your faith increase, and when doubts come to you, turn your thoughts to the Father and ask his help and blessings, and they will come to you, and you will know it. And love will become a part of your very 396 existence, and the happiness that you will receive will be only a forecast of what is waiting for you when you become one of us in our glorious homes in the skies. I must not write more now, but in closing will say that we all love you, and are all with you, and pray to the Father that his love and blessings may come to you in increasing streams of purity, and joy also, which only he can give. With all my love, I am your own dear and loving sister, Kate Stone. June 8, 1916. I am here, your own Helen. Tonight everything seems favorable to my writing you my promised message, and I will try. Of course, you must expect to find some expressions of love in it, for I could not write you if I did not tell you how much I love you, and how happy I am when you love me and want me to be with you. Well, sweetheart, I am now in the celestial sphere with your grandmother, though not in as high a plane as she, and have not so much of the divine love as has she, yet my happiness is so great that I can hardly realize myself what it means, and it is impossible to tell you of the beauties of my home and surroundings. I have tried when I was in a lower sphere to describe to you my home, and I did it very inadequately, giving you only a glimpse of what it really was. And now, if you could increase that description a hundredfold, you would have no conception of the beauty and glory of my present home and the wonders that surround it. I so often wish that you had words in your language that could be used to fully describe what this new home means to me, or even the one that I just left, but as you have not, you will have to be content with knowing that if you should take all the imagery of the revelation and add to it the sum total of all the beautiful descriptions of places and homes and scenery that the whole range of your English literature contains, you would have but a faint idea of what really exists. And besides, the great increase in the love that I possess and enjoy and the beautiful and loving and holy spirits whom I have for my companions, make this home of mine truly one of the mansions of the kingdom of heaven that Jesus referred to in the Bible. Only the mansions that he spoke of were not necessarily like the one that I have, for the mansions in the celestial heavens vary according to the soul development of their occupants. The Paget Messages 1916. I sometimes think that a very few years ago I was on earth, without much soul development and very little knowledge of the things of God, and now I have that development and knowledge of those things that fit me for these glorious mansions of the celestial spheres. How wonderful it all is, and how I thank the Father for His goodness and mercy, and for having given to mankind such a loving and glorious Savior as Jesus. And I do not forget that you had something to do with my starting on this great journey of progress, for I remember that when I first came to you things of the material were very attractive to me, and my appetites of earth had not left me, and how when I displayed some of these desires for the material things you rebuked me, and tried to point the way to the higher things, although I know now that your advice came from your merely mental conceptions of what I should strive for, as at that time you had very little knowledge of the things of the soul and scarcely any soul development. But your Christian training as a child and the conceptions that had come to you from these instructions, taught you that in the spirit world there must be something higher and beyond the mere earthly conditions of man, where purer joy and happier lives might be found and lived. And your love for me was such that you desired that I should find and possess these things, if possible. I have never forgotten what you then said to me, although at the time I thought you were unkind and not so anxious for my happiness. But long ago I had come to me the knowledge of the motive that actuated your advice, and much happiness has come to me from that knowledge and recollection. Only a little thought of love and an earnest desire on the part of mortal for the spirit, when it is directed in the way of the soul's progress, sometimes work a greater result than the conquering of a city, for it means the salvation of a soul, which is of more value than all the cities of the earth combined. And while I am writing in this strain, I wish to say that one of the greatest benefits or possessions that can come to a mortal is to have a mother or husband or wife in whose bosom glows the divine love of the Father, even though very faintly, for that little spark of love, to its own degree, makes that soul a part of the divine essence of the Father's love, and its influence upon the possessor causes an atmosphere of love and help to be felt by all who have the relationship to such possessor of a child or wife or husband. Christian instructions, though mixed with dogmas and creeds that may all 397, be wrong, yet will benefit, as in them are some thoughts that may awaken the soul to a condition that will let in some portion of the higher love, which will remain, though dormant, until the time comes when something will arouse the dormant love to action and life. And this benefit passes with mortal to spirit life, and the influence of the teachings, or rather the accompanying impressions of the Christian mother, etc., to help such a spirit to realize its true condition and to start on its progress to the attainment of the higher things of the soul. No wealth or riches or position that a mortal may inherit can possibly equal the influence of that one little spark in a Christian mother who possesses some portion of the divine love. And there is none so poor as the spirit who comes into the spirit world without any recollection of having, at some time in its earth life, received in its soul the influence of that little spark. So I say the man who has a Christian mother or wife who has, at some time in his earth career, taught him to turn his thoughts to God and to pray, even though that man in afterlife forsakes such thoughts and prayers, is a very fortunate being. For in the spirit life he has with him the memories of his earth life and nothing is lost, and among these memories will be the influence of his mother's teachings and his own prayers. And while he will have to satisfy the laws of compensation, yet these recollections of these thoughts and prayers will come to him sooner or later, and will help him in his progress to higher conditions. And you must remember, as has been often told you, that all souls will ultimately reach the planes of purification of their natural loves, or the glories of the spheres where only the divine love exists. After I commenced to receive into my soul this divine love, I became very anxious to increase its possession and my progress was very rapid, as they tell me, and as I progressed from sphere to sphere, ever were there coming to me new wonders and great happiness and the disappearance of those things which belong to my mortal life. No one who has not experienced this progress can understand what it means, and how the happiness increases and also the longings for more, and yet the astonishing fact is that notwithstanding these longings, the contentment of the spirit is perfect and no unhappiness, because of longings yet to be fulfilled, exists.